Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast, your meeting place for all things bikes, adventures, and the stories that follow. I'm your host, Charles Dedmer. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Gravel Junction podcast. Quite a lot has happened since we last spoke. Firstly, I have kind of moved country. I think that's a thing. I'm in the UK, giving that a whirl. Really excited, something that's been in the pipeline for a little while. Great to be over here. So many good friends and family, and hopefully some new bike adventures as well. I managed to get out yesterday and find some gravel. Really smooth, wonderful gravel. After that weekend in the Cedar, watching the competitors get bashed around on that corrugated Cedarburg gravel, this UK gravel seemed rather cute. I know there are a lot of sections that aren't cute, and I plan to find them. But needless to say, happy to be here. Yes, it is raining. Let's just get that out the way. I've had to buy items of clothing I never thought I'd have to buy. Waterproof booties and toe covers and fenders and lobster mittens, and it's only autumn. So, but I don't mind the cold. As long as I can wrap up, I'm fine. I'll try and dodge the heavy rain days and just do the light sprinkles, but we'll see. I dare say my Zwift account will be reactivated shortly, and many miles will be spent in the early dark hours of the winter mornings. But hey, that's cool. I'm excited. Something different. Back to that Cedar event. I won't go on too much in detail because I know social media was just blanketed, and rightfully so, with so much coverage of that race. What an event Ryle and his team have put on there. That race is going places if it's not already there. If you see tickets for sale, do yourself a favor. It's going to sell out quickly. Get involved. I know Ryle's got some exciting plans for next year to make the event more inclusive for various rider abilities. Just, yeah. The one disadvantage of being on the ground covering is that I don't get to ride it. I'll have to find a way of covering and riding, seeing if I can make a plan for that next year. As for the coverage, I hope everyone enjoyed that. I had so many positive messages and just general feedback, which is really motivating. My dear mother calling me the voice of gravel. I liked it. I'm going to take it. She said it now, so I'm going to use it. The idea of being able to go to various gravel events and cover in the way we did. It's not live all the time. It's not, 25 cameras, helicopters, but it allows people who aren't at the event to just get a feel for it and be part of the action, which personally, I love it when I see that. And so to be able to bring that sort of action in a way that people seem to resonate with and seem to enjoy, I'm all about that. So if you have events, let me know. If you know people who might benefit from having the Gravel Junction team on the ground, drop us a line. We're very, very keen to get involved there. I know there's plenty here in the UK, so I'm very excited to get involved with the local community. But okay, that's enough of that. We have a show to get on with today. My guest today is Mr. Brady Lawrence, a documentary filmmaker who, although you might not know his name, I'm pretty sure you might have seen some of his work. I first came across Brady in 2020 with his first feature-length documentary, Into the Rift, which is the story of the 2020 Atlas Mountain Race. You know the race created by the mad scientist, Mr. Nelson Trees, aka the creator of the Silk Road Mountain Race, which at the time of my recording this episode was actually underway, the 2022 rendition of the race. So it seemed perfect timing to sit down with Brady and discuss his latest work, which is actually the 2021 documentary. Following the 2021 version of the Silk Road Mountain Race. That documentary is called How to Bikepack the Silk Road Mountain Race. It was a real tongue twister to get all of that out. It was great to sit down with Brady and to hear what goes into making one of these films. I'm a massive fan of all things cycling documentary. I love the way these talented individuals and teams go around telling the stories of these events, of these races, and Brady's work is no different. And to hear the thought process and how from the proverbial napkin idea to a finished product, what goes into that, it was wonderful. And really, I thought, fits in with what we like to do here at the Gravel Junction, which is all about storytelling. So I won't get into too many details. Let's just get straight into it. We'll catch up on the other side to talk a bit more about some of Brady's new work, which has since come out since we had this conversation. But anyway, here's my conversation with Brady Lawrence. All right, cool. Well, Brady, thank you so much for joining us here on the Gravel Junction podcast, coming to us all the way from Seattle. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, it's the powers of social media and how we can reach out and make contact from the other sides of the world is so cool. You know, as I was saying just off air now, storytelling is such a big part of like the Gravel Junction, what it's about. So to have you, someone like yourself and your storytelling abilities on board to have a chat is very, very cool. I kind of wanted to sit down and unpack, you know, what goes into, you know, well, how do I say, just like unpack what goes into the making of your films, what your process is, you know, starting with Into the Rift, which was, I guess you could say the film where I discovered your work first. Well, as I said off air, I'd seen some of your other stuff, but then connected the dots. And then now your latest work, which we'll talk about in detail later on, is How to Bike Pack the Silk Road Mountain Race, a title I definitely want to unpack later as well. So yeah, maybe we just start with a bit of background. What is kind of your story as to where you're from and how you got into to what you're doing now?
Yeah, so I studied filmmaking in North Carolina. And so I always kind of knew that I wanted to be involved in the film industry in some way. But I always sort of thought that the only way to do that was to move to Los Angeles. But then for a variety of reasons, one originally being for a girl, I ended up not doing the LA route and kind of stumbled my way into documentary filmmaking and haven't really turned back since. And yeah, it really all started in 2015 when I was sort of learning the ropes a little more at a reality television company, which was an interesting place to start, but certainly it was a good way to kind of gain experience. But really sort of, I felt like I wanted to try something else. And so me and some friends put together a really long bike tour from Key West, Florida to the Arctic Ocean in Alaska. So the southernmost road in the US to the northernmost road. We called it Keys to Freeze, and we partnered with the National Parks in the US and the National Parks Conservation Association, and wanted to just like tell short. We wrote some articles, but also shot some videos along the way. And so that was kind of the start to, okay, can this be a thing? Can I make these sort of cycling films or cycling adjacent films? And that kind of kicked things off. And then I moved to Germany to work for Canyon, internally at Canyon for a couple of years. And then again, another great sort of experience and getting to meet a lot of people, and then decided I wanted to live on the west coast of the US. So moved out here.
And that's where you are. Oh, that's great. So cycling has been sort of a big part of your life for a long time, or did that kind of come with the film, or they just kind of went hand in hand? Where does the cycling fit in?
Yeah, that's a good question. My dad actually, he had his midlife crisis was cycling, which was as far as midlife crisis
cheaper than a Porsche.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's pretty good. So from a somewhat early age, I was just hand given like, basically a rigid frame mountain bike, or maybe it had whatever, 100 millimeters of suspension. And
just, might as well be rigid.
Yeah, exactly. Just, kind of a clunker and trying to ride that around. And so cycling's always been in my life, but it wasn't really until college I did a cross country ride as part of this group called Bike and Build that organizes these cross country rides where you work with affordable housing groups along the way. And so really for me, it's fun now sort of being in more of a competitive space, because cycling for me was really always about bike travel is sort of that's like
means of transport.
That's still the side of it that I do personally, just that touring basically.
Exactly. So do you still ride, I mean, between projects and that, do you try and find the time to go out and do like little bikepacking trips? So, but I guess it's a bit hectic with,
it's a bit hectic for sure, but I try to get in at least one kind of two week long trip every year, somewhere. So try to get sort of, especially living out in the west of the US. I mean, it's probably somewhat similar to being in South Africa, is, you know, you have such access to these remote areas out here that to not
just the space, the open space that, yeah, exactly. Why not try that? Okay. So the cycling thing was there kind of from a young age, and then, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask as far as filmmaking and photography. That was something that you always kind of wanted to head in that direction, whether you worked for commercial and clients. And that was one of the questions. You know, looking at your website, worked with some pretty big commercial clients, you know, the likes of Canyon, I saw Time, National Geographic, etc. And now you also have the documentary film side of things from... And we'll unpack it a bit more, but it seems like that's a direction you want to head in more. What are the challenges from commercial to documentary filmmaking? I suppose they all have their little idiosyncrasies to them, but how do you sort of deal with those differences? And you just have to put on a different hat each time.
Yeah, I think people in the documentary space all have probably pretty unique experiences based on what kind of documentary film you're making, how it's getting funded. Documentary is such a sort of fascinating, and you kind of have to find your own path, I've found, for sure. And so in that way, I would say that at least in commercial filmmaking can also be complicated and difficult in its own ways, but at least in terms of my experiences, commercial filmmaking can be simpler for me because it's more of, I have the skill set. I can kind of plug into a larger shoot and earn a decent paycheck, you know, to kind of pay the bills depending on who it's for.
It's kind of a procedure that you know, right? It's like, this is, as you say, plug and play. It's like, you know what to do to get, what to put in to get out, sort of thing, from a commercial side of things.
Yeah, exactly. And again, depending on the client, like you said, whether it's sort of Time Magazine or that's more sort of video journalistic, but other sort of more corporate clients, you know, it has not that, again, it's never sort of totally simple, but just those can feel more like a, this is me doing a job. Whereas these documentary films, especially these cycling ones, generally speaking, I'm not really making a ton of money putting these things together. If you crunch the hourly rate by the end of it, which I don't do because I don't want to.
It's a project of love.
they tend to. They're not. I mean, you know, I'm getting paid to make these things, but they do kind. They have the feeling of being a passion project, and they're just such huge undertakings, especially the longer ones, to get them finished. And then how do you release them? Where do you want to release them? And especially when you're working with multiple brands, the process of getting everyone on the same page.
I wanted to dig into that. It was kind of one of the questions I had here, was sort of, you know, what is, because I know it's a very big question, but what is sort of, you know, maybe go into the details into creating and filming something like the Atlas Mountain Race, you know, Into the Rift and the Silk Road Mountain Race. I know it's a very big question, but walk us through the process from an idea on the proverbial napkin to a finished product. Let's just use both those races I mentioned. Was it a case of you pitching an idea or someone approaching you because of your reputation, and then you kind of have carte blanche as far as the creative license goes? Maybe you can kind of describe that to us from kind of through the process.
Well, so they're kind of, those films are, I'll talk about them sequentially because they are sort of sequels in some ways. Or it's how the Silk Road one is sort of a sequel to the Atlas Mountain Race. So originally I had done a pretty big bikepacking trip through Morocco, when I left Canyon, and had published a series of like photo series and things like this. And so I had experience in that country. And so I think sort of through the pipeline, when Nelson Trees, the organizer of both the Atlas Mountain Race and the Silk Road Mountain Race, when he was putting that together, he was working with the brands, Jacopo, the brand manager at Pedaled, who was sort of the main sponsor for that one, reached out and asked if I wanted to make this film, and or the first film, Into the Rift. And that one was certainly, that one was more of a learning process. But I think from the beginning, we had these conversations because just what do we want these films to look like? And yeah, I certainly wasn't given carte blanche, but throughout both of the process of both of these films, I've been pretty surprised at to how, especially the last one, pretty much having almost total creative freedom to make the film that I wanted to make. But I think from the beginning, and this is sort of, this is interesting to me at least, which is, I think a lot of films in the adventure space, for better and for worse, there are so many great films, but there's a lot of films that are kind of, this is a really hardcore person who trains really, really hard doing something that is really, really hard. And that kind of, that feeling is the overarching feeling of the film. And again, which is great. Like those films are super inspirational. There are so many ones that are like some of my favorite films, but I think going into that one, I had seen so much of that, and I've met so many of these eccentric kind of bikepacking racers in the lead up to that, that I was like, okay, for this film, how do we feel about, I want it to be funny, and I want to see all of these kind of weird people through the field.
There's all these characters and stories, aren't there? Not just the guys at the front. There's so much from front to back. There's, especially on a race like that, where every individual character has their own story, I imagine. And you're trying to, you know, to capture that and get a different angle. And that's what comes through and Into the Rift. Like, that's what I loved about it was, it wasn't just the front man. It was everyone in between, you know, and you got to kind of feel, because for the average person like myself, if we had to do it, that's who we'd be, you know, that's who we would be on the course.
Yeah. So I think that from the beginning, that was sort of the plan, was to, that one, the first one was a little different in that it was the first time the race had been done, and we needed to cover the front of the race or the competition going on. Didn't need to, but chose to. And that was also my first experience film interacting with Sufjan. And so I was also a little bit like, oh, wow, this is crazy. Like, we have to just not sleep for 4 days and try to follow this guy. So I think that, you know, there's a lot more of that in Into the Rift, and then going.
Are you making that up? Are you having to be a lot more dynamic then? You go in obviously with a plan, but you just know that's going to just go to pot by virtue of what this race is. I can imagine, you know, and it's something we'll get into a little bit later as to some of your experiences, but is that one of the biggest challenges, especially in a, let's just use the Atlas or the Silk Road, where these extreme locations where when one thing goes wrong, it can just absolutely snowball. And like you say, these guys aren't sleeping for days. So you need to sleep at some stage, and then you miss action. You're like, oh no, how do we catch up?
Yeah. It's definitely one of those things where you have to have kind of a long list in your head of things that you kind of want to capture, but also understand that you're not going to be able to document all of it. So it's just a constant decision-making process, especially because the way Nelson organizes his races is that there are three control cars, and each one of those cars has a photographer in it. And then in my doing of these things, I will jump between the cars. And so it's just a constant process of just working with people, working with whoever's driving. The drivers are incredible. They're always just like, they're the real true workhorses, just not sleeping, just driving forever. But yeah, so it's this like, it's a super dynamic thing of like, okay, it would be really cool to catch this moment, you know, Sufjan, maybe he'll sleep, maybe he'll crack. But ultimately it's not, you can't do it. You can't just follow him the whole time, because there are some places you can't take the cars. There are some places, and it's just, you have to just make these decisions and be like, okay, so we're not going to get that. Let's circle back and try to, you know, find Ginny Tuff. Let's find, you know, James Hayden, and try to find these other stories.
Yeah.
And weave it together.
But I imagine on a course like that, that their stories are scattered everywhere, aren't
they? Yeah, definitely.
To sort of capture.
There's always something going on.
the editing process would. I mean, that's something I put, even just with my photography, the editing can be difficult. But I can imagine on film, you get back and you just have all these moments you've captured. You know, just these, and as you see the film again, it's triggered the memory of when you were there, and then the emotion comes out. Now you're trying to, okay, now I've got to leave that out and put that in. I can imagine that's. Is that like one of the more challenging parts afterwards, the editing process of that to dictate what the story is going to be?
Yeah, definitely. These both of these films were, you know, it's a logistical thing to shoot them for sure, but they're ultimately, the shoots are, you're just in it. And then editing them was each time was probably the hardest creative project I've done. First Into the Rift, I was like, this was so, I was just blown away by how difficult it was. And then with How to Bike Back Silk Road, that it was just, again, it was like, oh my God, why do I keep doing this to myself?
And the reason for that, what would be the reason for what was like the most challenging part of that editing?
Well, so the first for the Atlas Mountain, for Into the Rift, it was just so much longer than anything I'd ever made before. It's like a 41 minute film. I think I just couldn't quite figure out how to tackle it. And eventually I did. I ended up sort of breaking it out into a bunch of little films and then combining them all together was how I had to process it. But yeah, there's like a over 2 hour cut of that film, because you just shoot so much. I mean, you're going from like 50, 60 hours of footage to whatever, a 40 minute film. Maybe it's not 50. That seems crazy, but whatever, a lot of footage. So the first cut through of the film was close to 2 hours long. And so then it's like, okay, well, that's way too long. Nope. I don't want to watch this. So I need to figure out how to make something people watch.
It's up there with Titanic and Forrest Gump sort of epics. And it's like, okay, I know some people who would watch that, by the way, myself included.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think there might be some people, but, yeah, and then the same thing with Silk Road was even harder, because that was a longer shoot. Atlas Mountain was an 8-day shoot. Silk Road was a 16-day shoot that I wanted to be an even shorter film. Originally, I thought that film was going to be like 15 minutes long, but then it's just like, this is the same thing. It was like the first cut was over an hour, and I was like, I can't do this.
I'm interested. Why is it, because of the editing workload, but why would you want it to be 15 instead of, let's say, 30 or 45? Is it the post that would dictate that?
For that one, so it was just kind of how there was a lot of intention going in for the Silk Road doc, because I wanted to tell this thematic film that wasn't chronological, and I wanted it to have this frenetic pace, this like really like very fast, quick cutting. I knew from the beginning that was what I wanted this to be. I wanted it to kind of be this immersive thing where you got this really broad experience, but that you don't lose pace from, because it,
I felt the intensity of it. I think sometimes with these documentaries, they could be quite romantic, which is amazing, and cinematic. And what with your latest project, How to Bikepack, I did feel that. It was like, okay, these people are going through something in this event. You know, yes, they're going, you know, it's taking them a couple of days, but it's quite an intense process. And I felt that upping the ante, so to speak, compared to Into the Rift in that last one. And is that kind of why you went with that? I'm interested with the title and that idea. Where did that come about?
Yeah. The title. So the title is one of those things where it's like, I knew I wanted it to be themes. I knew I wanted it to be broken out into montages. So that was the idea from the start, was to have these series of montages and a lot of match cuts and cross cutting between different people doing the same activity. And so I always knew going in that even if I had like several ideas going in, like, oh, I want to get a lot of people doing hike-a-bike and I want those cuts to match. And I want a lot of people eating various foods and I want those cuts to match. And I want a lot of people fixing their bikes and I want all those cuts to match. So those are sort of the ones that stayed, but I knew that that was going to all get like tossed and be completely whatever we got. But I think, yeah, it was just this idea of like, how do you make a film that is another, basically just because this all started because the Wild Horses film, the original Silk Road film. So the guys that made that, they just did such a good job. They did an incredible job. You get a real feel for the country. You get a real feel for the race. And so when I started talking with Nelson and with Canyon about making this film, and I immediately was like, okay, we have to make something really different from Wild Horses, because I don't know, in my mind it was like, I don't want to just like do a second version of that film. I think, you know, people would watch that, I'm sure, because these races are so crazy and exciting, but I think I was just really interested in like what can we make that's different. And then when we start talking about these steps and themes, it was like, well, what if we do it like one of these how-to videos that you see on YouTube? And
how to do the Silk Road.
Yeah, I wonder, I haven't talked to anyone yet. Well, I mean, you know, who knows who all's watching this thing online or whatever, but the hope with some of it was that maybe some people will like search like how to bike back and think like, oh, I'm gonna learn how to do this thing, and then realize that that's not actually what it is, that they're really just watching a film about a race. But
what do you film here? Like one of the toughest races in the world. And yeah, these guys are hardcore.
Yeah. So an iron. Maybe that's happening, but I don't know. That was kind of, it was kind of a joke basically.
No, I loved it. Like when I saw because when I first saw the title, that was my reaction. I was like, what is bikepacking? Is it a how-to guide, you know, bikepacking.com or something? And then I was like, no, okay, that's what it is. And it's, you know, draws you in straight away, because as you see, you've seen Wild Horses, Into the Rift. These events are so well known now that to see a different angle and a different sort of perspective as far as how the film was put together, I thought it was great. Thoroughly enjoyed it and something else to kind of add to the library. I mean, I'm sure there's a couple of these cliched questions you've obviously been asked, but I think the listeners would love to know. Things like moments that stick out, not necessarily just these two projects, other projects, like challenges that have popped out during filming. Are there any real memorable, like, oh crap moments that you came across while you were filming? I'd love to know if there were any of those.
Yeah. I mean, the ultimate one that I think, you know, I'll if Nelson listens to this, I apologize, Nelson. we crashed a car in Kyrgyzstan.
Sorry, Nelson.
There was originally the original credit sequence of this film is like post car crash, because we were in the middle of nowhere and with this flipped car, and we we didn't know how we were going to get out of there. And then a group of 10 to 12 extraordinarily drunk Kyrgyz men in suits on their way to a wedding show up. And again, we're on like a mountain road in the absolute middle of nowhere. And these guys were going to just a super rural wedding, and they stop like 11 a.m. totally drunk and help us roll this car back over. And we were able to get it towed out and rent a new car. But yeah, that was, it's stuff like that. That's like, I mean, that was totally nuts. But,
and as you say, it's nuts in any circumstance, but in the middle of nowhere in that environment, it just adds to the story, I'm sure.
That was unlike anything I've ever experienced, for sure. But you can laugh about it now, but that's part of a bigger theme of just generally stuff just really goes wrong. And I mean, you see that with the writers, but it's also like camera parts break. Aside from like actually crashing a car, we've got tons of flat tires, you know.
Equipment wise, like, how much are you taking with you, equipment? Like, just how long's a piece of string, right? You just have to kind of, how many cameras are you carrying with you on a project?
I, for on these kind of things, I bring two. I bring
okay.
my main camera. I try to keep my kit super, super small for these things yeah. just because it's not, you know, if you schlep all.
You got to be dynamic, be able to climb up, you know, when you're at 4,000 meters yeah. and you don't have any oxygen.
Yeah, you don't want to be carrying a ton of stuff.
Full pack.
But yeah, I always have a second camera just because if the first one does get totally destroyed, it's always good to have.
Yeah, you need that backup.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then positive, like from these last two films in, the memories that kind of really stick out, that kind of you left the project with sort of with fond memories of? Were there things that kind of jump out?
It's the cheesy thing, but it's like endless. All these people, and maybe it's clear from watching the film, but this isn't like shooting, you know, a pro road race or any of those kind of things. All these people are pretty normal, down-to-earth people. They all want to be friends with each other. And so you go and you shoot these things and yeah, everybody just becomes friends and it's the media team. You feel like you're, you know, whether you're real friends or not. Yeah, but it's like you're part of this big, big race community. And so in that way, yeah, it's just cool to kind of to go to these things and to you recognize people and yeah, and they're all yeah, everybody doing these things generally, as far as I can tell. Obviously people take it seriously, you know, the guys at the front, the people at the front are hyper competitive, but even then they're all pals and hang out and yeah, everybody, it's just like they're really nice races in that way.
Yeah, it looks like an inclusive community. As you say, you're going to have these hyper competitive people, but that's on the bike. As soon as they get off, it seems to be, right, we're friends again. And that kind of ties into, I was doing some research for the show and I came across this line on your blog, which you might have written a while ago, right? But I really liked it. And it went, encouraging empathy and understanding through cross-cultural, continent-crossing, exploration and storytelling, right? Now, I'm imagining this was written a while ago, but the reason I liked this line was it got me thinking. So I've always been fascinated by how a filmmaker reacts in the moment out in the field, especially when filming a moment of difficulty or pain. Okay. So moments I'm sure you encountered, especially, you know, in the likes of Atlas and Silk. So I'm intrigued to hear how the intentions of that line I just read, encouraging empathy, how the intentions of this statement are perhaps challenged when filming like those moments, you know, when you got these people in front of you going through difficulties, how do you like deal with that from a filmmaking point of view?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. I wrote that several years ago. That's fun. That's pretty, yeah. I forgot about that. Anyways. I think again, not to give another sort of cliched answer, but it's always about balance. I find there are people who are super comfortable on camera and there are people who are willing and open. And I think you really can by showing people's personal moments and creating these connections. Like that's one of the best ways you can build empathy. And that's kind of at its heart for me. Sort of the crux of wanting to be a documentary filmmaker is how do you, not that, you know, I think generally there's a lot of empathy for people doing bikepacking races. You know, I don't necessarily think that that's a group that, you know, needs more empathy per se, but I do think it's like one of these things where, I mean, I'll bring up like a little bit of the uglier side of these things, but like even, you know, YouTube comments are probably right. Just about as can be like the worst place in the world.
It's
right.
It's a dark space to go. People's opinions of your vulnerable work.
Totally. And so in that regard, like there's already one comment that came up of someone being like, you know, why would you ever go to any country ending in Stan? Like seems dangerous, whatever they say, but something just like super, you know, unempathetic and super ignorant. And so this is sort of a different answer to the question you're asking, but I was just thinking about that building empathy thing. And yeah, it's like the first, even with Morocco, I remember when I originally was planning on biking around Morocco by myself, I wasn't super sure that that was what I wanted to do. But then I talked to my dad about doing it, and he was kind of like, well, are you sure that's the best idea? And I was like, oh, okay, well, because you just said that, now I'm definitely doing it. Like, I wasn't sure. I wasn't totally sure. But now that you made that comment, this is definitely what I'm going to do. And so it's like the same with that. It's like, hopefully, I mean, maybe that YouTube person watched it and they still felt that way. But the hope would be that people see these kinds of things, see these kinds of films, and are like, oh, cool. I was maybe a little nervous to go travel through Kyrgyzstan or through, you know, Kazakhstan or any of these countries. And now that I've seen this and know that all these people do it and have such a good time, maybe they'll go. Yeah. So that would be like at its, like, you know, at its highest ideal.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's happening.
Sort of highest, but it's true though. Cause I don't consider myself the most adventurous as far as like out of my comfort zone. I'll go and do it, but you know, probably needs to be pushed, whatever. But I, through my inner past life, managed to spend a lot of time in likes of Montenegro and had my bike with me and headed off into Albania and, you know, dipped in and out. And that was a perfect example where the optics of it internationally, you know, or don't go there. And I had some of the most incredible experiences I've ever had on a bike with the most, and it was the people that made it, you know, it's that the community and how they interact with you. And that's where I think films, and especially, you know, your two films and the first one from the Silk Road, they show that side of things, you know, that human side, which I think, I don't know Nelson Trees at all, but he seems to give off this vibe of community and is a massive thing, you know, and making sure that the communities where these races are taking place, they aren't getting taken advantage of, if that makes sense, to show them in a light that's really positive and helps to build up instead of break down. And that is, you know, that's something I think does come through in, and that's why I really like your last film, because it has that quirkiness as far as the angle you're coming in with the bikepacking thing, but it's still, the story is solid and the interaction with the local community is very, very cool. And so that, I suppose that does answer the empathy question on that. But I still want to know, okay, when you have someone in front of you that's having a really bad, bad day, do you keep filming until they say stop?
Yes and no. I think that is sort of like the Verite school of filmmaking is like, that's what you do. You
just keep rolling.
Keep rolling until someone tells you not to roll anymore. And then maybe you still do. I, for these things specifically, for these last two films, I think depending on the job, there are some circumstances where, especially if it's like somewhat for something, I'm trying to think if I have a good example of this, but there's nothing coming to mind. Especially like in the mountain biking world, and there are just places where it's kind of like, I'm just going to keep rolling no matter what anyone says.
Because people crash. It's what they do. If you're watching the sport, you're kind of half expecting this to happen. Sort of thing, right?
Exactly. But so for these things though, again, because these aren't, none of these people doing this race, even the people at the top, I mean, some of them might be wealthy independent of bike racing, but no one doing these things is making a lot of money doing this. And in that way, it's like, it just makes the calculus in my brain different, where, you know, ultimately this is just a person who it's like, you know, who really cares about doing these things, and they're not some kind of like pampered, you know, machine. And so
I don't see it as a job. So, it's not like when you're doing a pro athlete, they have to kind of just get on with it, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. And so in that way, there's a lot of things that I stopped filming happened in this film that would have been great. You know, you would have seen a couple more people cry. But like, what's the point? You know, I don't know. I don't know. In my mind.
No, I appreciate that. It's just something, it's like, well, I would never be a wildlife filmmaker, because I don't think I could watch Bambi getting eaten by Simba, you know. I'd want to help. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't have it in me. But that's fascinating. Are you kind of from that now, are you working on any other bikepacking projects, or what have you got kind of in the pipeline as far as projects go?
Yeah. So there are two films coming out soon
that you can talk about anyway.
Yeah, I can talk about them. There's nothing secret. They're both basically done, so they should come out. I don't know. One might come out this week. I don't know. These are ones that I have less control over. But one is about a woman named Leah Davison, who's a 2-time Olympic mountain bike short course athlete. And she is openly gay. And I filmed with her at Unbound Gravel. And we kind of did this. It's a shorter piece, but just about her and her process of deciding to come out. And she's just one of, there aren't that many openly gay mountain bikers in the space. And so, yeah, I was sort of just this, not sort of, it's a story about her coming out and the community or support that was required for that. And also the community support that's required to compete in these sort of high level races. So that's one film that's coming out that I think is pretty good. And the other one is about this guy named RJ Sawyer, who it may be, he's the guy in Into the Rift that walks a huge section of the course. So there, that's a theme in both of these films. There are these crazy guys that walk huge sections. So RJ was my first experience of that. And he's this very charming Canadian man. And he, I just remember, yeah, we met him somewhere in the desert, right? And he's like scootering on his bike. And I was like, these people are absolutely wild. And so I became sort of friends with him. And he has a, I think, I don't know how, his son's probably maybe almost 4 now, but he has a young son and they do all these bikepacking trips together, and his son's getting pretty big though. And they wanted to do one last sort of larger than life thing. And so this film should come out soon, but him and his son, Ollie, with his son, Ollie in a trailer, he did a 200-mile gravel race in Utah and tried, there's like a 24-hour time limit that he had to try to beat. But so that film, I think, is also another about a 30-minute film that I didn't edit. I just shot that I think should be out soon. And that one is a lot of fun because there's his son, Ollie, is one of the cutest children I've ever interacted with. So there's just a lot of fun kid shots.
Feel good moments on there. Yeah. There's always a good. Okay, cool. Well, I'll make sure to kind of put any or links to what's the best place for sort of people to reach you, like Instagram, website.
My website.
Put those.
Yeah.
Put links in there. Any plans on besides what you're working on, like sort of bucket list projects you'd like to be involved with or start up, like anywhere you'd like to shoot or type of project, or are you kind of enjoying this bikepacking scene at the moment?
Yeah, I think that's a fun question. There's one I've only told this to like a couple people, so maybe putting this out here will maybe make it more of a reality. I'm really fascinated by how there are several people who are really, really good at these races, and a lot of them are bike couriers. So they're like bike delivery guys. And I kind of want to tell a story about all these guys doing these races, who the way they make their living, the way they stay in really good shape for these races is by delivering stuff. And so there's
amazing bike handling.
Yeah, amazing bike handling. But yeah, Sufjan was a courier. Adrian Lichty, who's really good courier. Alan Shaw, who's a lot in the film, is another courier. And so we'll see if I can figure out, you know, it's like, how do you get these things made?
But yeah, but I mean, as just those courier guys, I mean, they have some character to them. They have some, you know, the ones I follow a number on social media and their stories, and like, yeah, they any of the fixie scene, for me, we have a bit of a fixie scene here in Cape Town, and these guys, the way their bike handling and the way they ride their bikes, it's nuts. Like, they take their lives into their own hands. These alley cats and stuff they do.
Yeah,
I think that'd be a cool project. That would be fun to see, because it's such a, you think of someone delivering in, you know, Manhattan and then winning a bikepacking in some random, you know, country in the middle of the desert. It's sort of quite the journey, I imagine.
Yeah, that's my thought. So that's cool. Kind of a scheming a scheme I have.
Well, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen, on the podcast.
Don't take that idea.
Junction podcast. It's, idea. It's already been trademarked by Brady Lawrence, yeah. So you cannot take that idea. But that's very cool. Well, Brady, well, thank you for the time. I really kind of appreciated getting – that was me kind of nerding out a little bit because, as I say, I love a good documentary. In the last 2 years, if I ever want to get motivated, there's two I watch. There's Into the Rift, and the other one I have a soft spot, maybe because I'm moving to the UK, is the GB Juro with Lachlan Morton. I just love that film just because it's like, okay, I'm going to go ride now. So I have this delusion now that I can do that route as well, which we'll see how that ends up. But I the whole storytelling thing, I'm so excited about with this movement of gravel and bikepacking and all that. And I speak at length on the show about how that's creating this lower barrier to entry for people to ride bikes. But then there's these people such as yourself, these talented people coming in and telling these stories and capturing it, which like the romantic side of me just loves that because you get to do it and then get to go home and relive it all over again, which is very, very cool. So I appreciate that. If you're ever down Africa or Europe way, you know, drop us a line and we can maybe go for a ride.
That'd be great. I went to Cape Town one time to film parts of the Cape Epic. And it's one of the absolute most beautiful places I've ever been.
How long did you spend here?
I was only there for a little over a week, and yeah, so it was way too short.
Yeah, especially if you're working. I mean, that Cape Epic is an intense event for anyone involved. Like, that's nuts. The gravels. There's some pretty interesting stories starting to come out here, and like from the gravel and bikepacking. So you'd be surprised what. Who knows? Maybe you find a story out here to come and. Kind of come in a film, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
Yeah, lovely. Brady, well, again, thanks so much for the time and look forward to talking again soon.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
And there we go. Another great show. Thanks to Brady for coming on and chatting with us, giving us some of that behind the scenes insight as to what goes into making these wonderful documentaries. Clearly, I'm a massive fan of all things cycling documentary. And even as I record this, I'm like, I think I might have to watch a few this evening to get motivated to head out into the rain tomorrow morning and go for my own bike ride. We'll make sure to put links to all the shows, all the films and material that we mentioned today in the show notes. You can follow Brady at Brady Lawrence Photo on Instagram. His latest work, his latest film, You Can't Do It Alone, the Leah Davidson story as mentioned in the show. Go and see that is out now. Another great piece of filmmaking. And yeah, just follow, give Brady a follow because just to see what work he comes out with, it really is world class. As always, thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. I'm excited about being here in the UK and hopefully reaching out to a new audience, reaching out to some new guests. And I really want to try and do some more face-to-face interviews. Sit down with people and you know, as I say, face to face, because I just think it brings a different dynamic. So hopefully being here now, I'll be able to reach a few more guests that way. So if you know of anyone, if you can think of anyone you'd like to have on the show, drop me a DM on Instagram and I'll do my best to get them on the show. As always, guys, please, reviews, ratings makes such a difference for us to get for other people to find us. So go leave us a little 5-star review or rating wherever you listen to your podcast. That's all we have time for. I think I'm going to go and clean my bicycle because it is looking slightly dirty from the ride. I feel like this is also going to be a thing. All right, that's all we have time for, everybody. Look forward to seeing you all again soon. And until then, keep riding. Bye for now.